Get ready. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Weekly Cooldown. I am Kami Jace, your host for another episode. If you're joining us for the first time, this is the show where we get to know the gaming news of the week and we get to know our guest. It is episode 199 of the Weekly Cooldown. We are one away from 200. You know it. It is September 18th. Paul is not feeling too well, so we won't hear from him for a while because next week is not only is it episode 200, but it is also Latin or Hispanic Heritage Month. So that means Paul, who is white, cannot be on the show. Hispanic and Latin folks only. That does not include Paul. Paul, I'm sorry. I know you're listening to this, but you're white. Anyway, so we are going to get right into these headlines. And then I have a guest who I haven't seen in a very long time. And we're gonna talk about the news and hopefully talk about other things that are going on in life. Let's jump right into it. Let's just get right into it. August and September have been and are still big months for video games. From Baldur's Gate 3 to Starfield, there have been a lot of games capturing plenty of attention, and October is looking to be no different with Alan Wake 2, Spider-Man 2, and City Skyline 2, and so much more on the way. Which is why Alone in the Dark, not 2, which was set to release October 25th, is being pushed back to January 16th. THQ Nordic said that the delay is not at all due to technical struggles, but, quote, to avoid competing with the wake of Alan's epic release and to evade the dazzling skyline of cities adorned by the graceful swings of Spider-Man. Get it? Spider-Man 2, Alan Wake 2. They put all the games in their quote. Alan Wake 2, which was originally set for October 17th, has been pushed back for similar reasons to October 27th. For those interested in Alone in the Dark, the game does have a playable teaser available on Steam called Alone in the Dark Prologue. A massive amount of Baldur's Gate 3 mods have hit the market, including, of course, several quote-unquote enhancements to the game, as well as actual enhancements to the game. However, for some, the most important mod, allowing you to pick from 54 races, including four of Final Fantasy XIV's races, is one of the most important of them all. The mod package includes things like kobolds, minotaurs, changelings, and even Asimar as playable races, though it is likely that the game's race-specific dialogue may not fit as well while playing any of these races. It does open up the possibilities of interesting character creation. The mod is called Dungeons and Souls Fantastic Multiverse Mod, and it is available on Nexus Mods. And finally, as Mortal Kombat 1 gears up for its release on September 19th, we've been getting a look at new takes on old characters like Reptile and Sindara and even Shao Kahn. But now joining the list is Nitara, and joining the list of Hollywood names to play a role in Mortal Kombat alongside those like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone is now Megan Fox. The voice of Nitara, the winged demon-looking character in Mortal Kombat 1, is indeed Megan Fox, star of Jennifer's Body. The confirmation from NetherRealm comes after a massive leak on Reddit earlier this week that showed screenshots of a full playable roster. There is apparently one more character, however, we've yet to see any footage of, so stay tuned for more potential news. And those are just some of the headlines for this week. Of course, if I missed any and you gotta chat me about it for whatever reason, hit me up, Kami Jace Gaming on Twitter, Kami Jace Gaming on Blue Sky, or WK Cooldown on Twitter if you truly need your Twitter DM fix. Just hop on in there. Hey, who's my guest? Who are you?
Hi, I am Eddie V.
What do you do? Who are you?
I am a podcaster, and I am one of the founders of Boss Rush Media.
Oh, tell us about Boss Rush Media.
Yes, Bossfish Media is a community of writers and creators where we talk about games, entertainment, and other aspects of the gaming industry. We have, you know, a couple of shows like Nintendo Pop Block, that I host with the other founder and my best friend, Corey Derrick. We also have the Boss Rush podcast, where it's just like a general video game show. And we have like side shows like 1v1, where we speak to content creators and developers and other people in the gaming industry. And yeah, we do a lot of work of recording podcasts and writing at bossrush.net.
Very cool. Tell us about some of your recent shows. What have you been up to? What are you recording over there?
So, for Nintendo Power Block, we are, you know, just recording our basic show, but we've been talking a lot about Super Mario Brothers Wonder. We just did a direct, recap, like a breakdown and giving our thoughts about it. We definitely been talking about new snacks for Snacktendo and Nintendo Power Block. And we're kind of been getting ready to see what does Nintendo has planned for, the next, gen console from Nintendo. So we've been talking about the rumors that's been coming out. We actually been disagreeing about a lot of things with that because a lot of the stuff doesn't feel Nintendo, but because it's a new version of Nintendo with the head management and partners that they have now, a lot of that is changing. So it may not be true. And we always say, you know, we used to frame, the phrase, take it with a grain of salt when we talk about it. And, for a lot of us, like me, I'll bring a salt truck if I feel like it could be true, you know, there's some flavor to it, I'd be like, I'm gonna throw some seasoned salt on this. You know, how you do some fries.
Some Lowry's.
Yeah. So that's what we, kind of been talking about and just giving our hot takes about, Microsoft and Sony also with things that they, announced and everything. We actually had two good shows about Microsoft because of them going to court and just the future of the company working with Nintendo.
Sure. So let's focus in on the next gen console thing because I do kind of enjoy I don't want to call it a console war because it really isn't in my opinion. Like everyone has their favorite, but like, when it comes to consoles, everyone has what they're looking for, right? With Xbox, you have some different specs than PS5. And with PS5, you have a different catalog. And with Nintendo, you have, like, you know, they have their own roster of IP and of characters that have persisted time and space and probably will, like, you know, travel onto alien planets and do the same thing there. So when it comes to a next-gen console, first, I guess, what could they possibly give us at this point that would be either a next-gen Switch that would be worth it or like a completely different thing? Because if they give us a completely different thing, that feels kind of almost too soon for them, right? Because they usually come out with a different console completely off the schedule of like an Xbox and a PS5. They're on their own timeline. So are we looking at something different or are we looking at like the Game Boy Advance SP but for the Switch?
Well, Nintendo is known for innovation. So normally sometimes they take their previous generation and see how they can improve upon it, or they'll start brand new and bring something new to the table. I think with their next console, I think, you know, definitely with graphics and engines and stuff like there, I think we're probably going to get something better with that. I don't think there's going to be anything innovative just yet. And stuff. You know, I think they just like, we need this console before we could really get into some research and development and see how to go forward with our like next gen system. Right. So, you know, they got something successful and they were just like, how do we improve on it? We don't have to innovate just yet, but how do we improve on it? And for people who don't really know Nintendo, when it comes to graphics, Nintendo doesn't really go for the realistic or the beautiful cutscene or dark and edgy kind of style and look. Nintendo's known for making a game out of wool, out of Crayola crayons, out of, you know, doing different stuff and using different art styles and still, you know, has still catered to American audience, but still have that Japanese feel for their country. So that's kind of with Nintendo. And you kind of realize that Nintendo, if they feel like art style is beneficial to a game of their own, they'll go ahead and use it. Like, me and Corey was talking about, I think people don't understand, you know, Gears of War and stuff may look like gorgeous and everything, even Forspoken, like, if those games look gorgeous with what those teams have done. But then you look at something like Fire Emblem Awakening, or you look at Yoshi's Island for the Super Nintendo, and those games are still impressive and still talked about.
Sure.
When it comes to graphics and stuff. So Nintendo kind of has that history, knowing that if they present a game with great graphics and or art style that they prefer, that works for them, sometimes that style and that look is brings some kind of longevity to them. To those games and everything. Like,
I absolutely agree with that. In fact, I think where Nintendo does strive, or where it does find its kind of groove in the world, is that it takes its own approach to not only game style but gameplay. It doesn't try to be any of the other games, right? Like,
yes.
For as much as The Legend of Zelda has come into the kind of open world market, it's not trying to be, I don't know, like a Jack and Daxter or something. It is certainly its own thing. But I guess my issue, and I hate to agree with people on the internet because that's where I see this mostly talked about, but you know, the Reddit folks and things like that, but I do agree to an extent that at least when it comes to maybe it's just Pokemon, but when it comes to Pokemon, it seems like the Pokemon Company and Nintendo are not in agreement the same way they are with like Kirby and Mario Odyssey and, you know, not Wind Waker, fucking, Tears of the Kingdom and the other games, right? There's something, so vast and special and kind of polished about those games that a few of the latest Pokemon games don't have. So, like, is it that the Pokemon Company is just missing some special team member to put that polish on it? Or is it just the complications of the Switch?
So it's not the complication of the Switch. It's not really even Nintendo. Nintendo would give the Pokemon Company time to do what they want to get the game out. A lot of people don't realize Pokemon belongs to the Pokemon Company. It is not, it's not a Nintendo IP. Because if it's a Nintendo IP, if it wasn't a Nintendo IP, you wouldn't have the card game. You wouldn't have all of these tournaments. You wouldn't have anything on the computer and everything. You know, Pokemon started on a Nintendo handheld with it being on the Game Boy. But the only thing that Nintendo has is a couple of stakes in the company and everything. If the Pokemon Company wanted to take Pokemon and put it on Xbox, they have every right, and Nintendo can't say anything about it because it's not their IP. And so you got to realize that the Pokemon Company has to put the polish. Secondly, they don't own Game Freak. Game Freak is the developer that the Pokemon is giving the game and stuff. Where have you ever played a Pokemon game that Game Freak was not involved?
Sure.
Or it came literally from the Pokemon Company itself. So I think the thing about it is that they need more time to create, even though they got a lot of Pokemon, you know, to like making everything, I think the teams need time to be able to breathe. You know, they don't want, me and Corey was talking about this, and I told him the Pokemon games cannot be treated as the latest Madden games.
Right.
Because you see the quality drop. They sell well. They look good. Everybody been wanting this open world company, Pokemon company, but wanting it and not knowing what to put into it to give you that want has become a problem. So with that, you set yourself for high expectations that this next Pokemon game is going to be the best. And sometimes it may not be because you don't know what you will actually want to get out of a Pokemon game on a console. And the Pokemon Company, they're doing so much that I'm glad, hopefully, they decide to go another route for a Pokemon game and maybe not use Game Freak. You know, let Game Freak connect with Game Freak, develop whatever they want to develop. And the Pokemon Company, you can wait a year or two. You can wait a year or three. Metroid should have had tons of games out. But Metroid has missed a lot of console cycles on handheld and the main systems.
Because they're taking their time to really develop what they're doing.
Yeah, and so I think that at this time the Pokemon Company needs to just rest. Once they learn the ins and outs of the Nintendo next gen system, you know, it's still going to have that beautiful animation and sprite based looks, but you know they're going to need to make sure that game is optimized and everything, and maybe they're going to have to take time to learn the system for Nintendo's next console, because everybody can say, oh, just put it on Xbox and it'll run better. You still got games that look beautiful still running at 30 frames per second and dropping on a powerful console.
Yeah.
So it's not even what console it needs to be on. It's just like they need to take their time to develop that game. And maybe by the time that this new next gen system come out for Nintendo, I think the Pokemon Company would be like, okay, we learn the ins and outs. We see what they could do. Maybe we should use Unreal 5 and see what we could do on that system for their next gen and take our time. Okay, our game is coming out. This game looks gorgeous. Oh, it plays so smooth, plays so good. And all those past games, everybody's going to say, why couldn't those past games be like this Pokemon? Well, the Pokemon Company needed time to get that game developed and optimized.
Sure. That's true. Okay. Asked and answered. Thank you. for your next question, what have you been playing this week?
So, I started Starfield, and
Are you having fun?
I am not.
Well, interesting. Yet. Okay. And
because I just started, know, when the game came out, you know, I didn't have time to explore the world. I do not like the space combat. The spaceship combat, throw that in a trash bin.
Okay.
I think the thing about it is that it doesn't make you feel like you're moving or give you that depth that you're moving. Like, you would think that if I'm pressing forward, I'll be getting closer to the planet, and it doesn't look like that. So it's kind of weird controlling. And then you really don't get a chance to keep in front of the enemy ships and everything. So they could just wipe you out. And everything, even though it looks like you're trying to chase them and stuff, they could just murder you in a couple of hits and everything, or take down your shield. And it's just like, this is the tutorial. this is unfair to the players who are trying to get into this game. Why mm-hmm. are you making it difficult and everything? Right. Like, if I would prefer that if you're going to give me something space, a special thing, I'd rather it be like Kingdom Hearts or be like Star Fox. Or heck, give me something like Nier Automata where you turn it into a 2D game and everything. To get to whatever I need to do. And it's just like, this game doesn't need space combat because the space combat is terrible. Hmm. You know, it's not on the level of Top Gun NES, yet, but, everybody looked that up because I know that's an old reference, but mm-hmm. what was Konami thinking? But it's not fun. Now, the gameplay, like the shooting and stuff, is really good. I think I'm going to stay in first person because it doesn't feel right in third person.
Bethesda games always feel weird behind the back.
Yeah. I think I haven't really studied a Bethesda game. I own a couple of their games, but I haven't, like, the only one that I really completed is Wolfenstein 2. I just replayed that and beat it on easy. Love that game. It feels good. But like Bethesda themselves, I haven't really like sat down and completed their game because the Fallout games are confusing to me. Skyrim, I tried to get into and was bored. Didn't really know what to do with that. So it's just like, I think Starfield is going to be a great game the more that I stick with it. But right now, it's like a 5. And I know that seems kind of harsh right now, but I think because of the space combat and not being able to get into more of the game, like it took me almost an hour and a half just to get done with the space combat. And luckily somehow the system, you know, I don't know if it was a bug in the game or what, but they allowed me to, shoot. You know, keep the enemy in my range so I could shoot and defeat them and everything. And I'm like, and this is what I need. I'm like, I can understand if there's a challenge, if there's other ones around me, but if I'm locked on to an enemy and I'm trying to get to them, why can I not get to them? Why does it feel like I'm not even moving and everything? Mm-hmm. So, it's right now, it's a 5. I'm not enjoying it just yet. Until I start playing, the regular battles when you're on ground are fun. They're good and everything. You know, it's pretty much, it's not much of a cover based shooter or anything. It's more of a free kind of open roam, pop 'em if you can with the gun kind of thing.
Right.
So that's my experience right now with Starfield. I honestly think for me, I wouldn't put it in Game of the Year nominations at all for anything.
Oh, okay.
And I'm sorry, but I think Hi-Fi Rush is a higher ranking than Starfield right now. And like I said, I can't wait for some Motorsport to come out to see how that goes. But Starfield is out. Congrats. Okay. Question mark.
yeah, right.
Sea of Stars, on the other hand, I am loving. It does have that Chrono Trigger feel. It doesn't let me grind like I want to grind, but I do like the fact that if you go to a whole area and you like wipe out the enemies, you know, the only time that they actually come back is if you leave that area, like the whole area, and go to the main world and then come back. Mm-hmm. I haven't had any problems with the bosses, which I'm really happy about. And if I did, there is a way to make the game a little bit easier so people can fight the bosses. They actually don't have potions to revive your character. It's just as long as you can keep your character fighting, and parrying and stuff like that, keep them alive. Your other characters will come back with half health. And you would just have to go in and, you know, use an item that will heal the whole party. Or if your two main characters, Zell and, Valir, if they come together and have a special attack, to do a combo, they could heal the whole party together. So that's kind of more Chrono Trigger-ish with that, and stuff. You get your magic back by attacking enemies. And it kind of does some double tests. A lot of people say that it has that Paper Mario feel to it. And I can see what they mean, with it. It's a gorgeous game. I am 17 hours into it, and I think I'm halfway through. A lot of people said that, you know, who are beating it, like beating it at 25 hours. But I might try to go and see if I can get through everything besides the fishing. I'm not a big fisher in games.
Sure.
But I'm going to see, like, if they, hopefully they have like an ultimate weapon I could get or something. And I think it has two kind of endings, so I might try to find a way to get the true ending on my first try and stuff. But I am definitely enjoying Sea of Stars, really, really loving it. Play Ishan Like a Dragon, on Xbox, having a little bit fun with that, but I gotta return to that game because I'm only on chapter two. Like, I finished the first chapter and then I put it down because, I repurchased Death's Door on Xbox. I beat the game on Switch, but I didn't have the Xbox version. I got it on Xbox, so, cause it was on sale, and I might try to 100% it to get the achievements. And I love Death's Door. It's so much fun and it's so good. And it truly is funny. It really is fun. So that's pretty much what I am playing. And then there'll be some games I will be picking up soon. Armored Core 6, I'm waiting for Black Friday.
Yes, of course. Sales for the Americans.
Yes.
Very good, very good. All right. Asked and answered once again. Thank you very much, Eddie V. We are going to take a quick break. I got to drink some water because talking is thirsty work, and we're gonna be back with some headlines. We're gonna talk about SAG-AFTRA, and we're gonna talk about Starfield, which you're not into, but it's okay. You might be into it later. Who knows? We'll see. We'll all see. You'll all see. We'll be right back.
You wake up startled in the middle of the night, convinced that there's something out there in the darkness. Your brain tells you that there's nothing to be afraid of. Unfortunately, your brain is dead wrong. If you love the mix of horror, mystery, and comedy in shows like Buffy, Ash vs. the Evil Dead, or Supernatural, you'll feel right at home on The Crit Show, a Monster of the Week actual play podcast where the players, playing as themselves, are tasked with being the last line of defense from the forces of evil that go bump in the night. You can find The Crit Show at thecritshowpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, welcome back to the show. So, like I said, we're going to talk about SAG-AFTRA and Starfield, starting, of course, with SAG-AFTRA. As you all know, by the way, I am a union boy, so I am very biased about this story, so don't get me fired up. No, I'm kidding. But anyways, let's just get to it. SAG-AFTRA has sent a strike authorization vote to members, this time over the renegotiation of the Interactive Media Agreement. The strike, if authorized, would affect voice acting and motion capture work for many major publishers in the video game industry. The agreement was set in 2017 and was supposed to expire in 2020, but was extended to 2022 and later once more to this year. The agreement could see publishers like Epic Games, WB Games, Activision, and Disney all affected. SAG-AFTRA President Fran Drescher said, "Once again, we are facing employer greed and disrespect. Once again, artificial intelligence is putting our members in jeopardy and reducing their opportunity to work." The voice of Deus Ex's Adam Jensen and Starfield Sam Coe, Elias Tofexis, sorry if I'm getting your name wrong, Elias, is also worried about AI and said to PC Gamer recently that many performers are worried about AI when it comes to voiceover work. He also said that from the motion capture work he's already done, he has spotted some other games with his motion capture performances and suddenly would receive a small check and no credit in the video game. Voting for the members runs from September 5th, so it's already happened, and will end on September 25th, with negotiations to commence again on September 26th. Eddie, first thoughts?
So, I had to think about this one, because I know this will definitely affect Sony, with a lot of their first party games, like Naughty Dog, definitely with like The Last of Us.
Absolutely.
It kind of will affect. I really think that if they do decide to go strike with this, and depending on how many games are, you know, kind of done, you know, with people's performance when it comes to their new games, I think a lot of people could just be like, well, you know, we got an employee who's not part of the union, not part of SAG-AFTRA. Let's give them a chance there. Or maybe there is a content creator that, you know, we could go with and they could do the voice and stuff. Because people are still looking for voiceover work and they may not be part of it. So I think these companies and publishers could go out and hire them and give them a full up fee, and be like, okay, this is the amount that we're going to pay you. This is, you know, for the sessions and everything, and, residuals we may work on with every game that is sold. You know, there may be something like that. Looking at this, a lot of people will probably be thinking about Bayonetta 3, how that voice actress was, and how she felt like she was kind of lowballed, with being paid. And then, you know, that whole incident where we got the full story, or the ideal of that full story and stuff. I think they'll come to agreement quicker than they would the actual strike that's going on. Because I think these publishers definitely need these actors and voiceover people for their games and stuff. You know, Ben Starr, like he's become like the biggest voiceover, not only because of Final Fantasy 16, but, you know, his Twitter work, doing stuff like there. So people will probably want him in the game. And, you know, like Kingdom Hearts with Disney and stuff, you know, Square Enix definitely would love to have people with voiceover. I don't think so much with Nintendo, because the only game that really does a lot of voice work, or series, I should say, for Nintendo is Xenoblade Chronicles.
Right.
Like, and yes, you could probably say a little bit for the cutscenes for Fire Emblem, but you're not getting that for a full game. You're still getting text boxes and everything.
I think it's hard to say exactly which games are going to be affected, because the list of major studios and publishers is a little short from what I can see. PC Gamer only mentions Activision, Blind Light, Disney, Electronic Arts, Epic, Formosa, Insomniac, Take-Two, VoiceWorks, and WB. A lot of those are US-based places, right? Right. Square Enix is, of course, Japan. Nintendo is Japan. They have offices in the United States, but they may follow their own contract and procedures and may not have, you know, they may not be involved with SAG-AFTRA. So I have to wonder, I guess, how much this affects those studios. And also, to your point about people who are still going to be looking for work while they are potentially on strike, I have to wonder if it will be seen as, you know, what they call scab work if you go to a studio that isn't participating in the contract. And to that point as well, I know that with movie contracts, there are some smaller studios that are like, yeah, absolutely, we agree to everything that your union says you should get. And then there are people working, right? So is Nintendo and Square Enix and all those other publishers that are not on this list, are they going to behave the same way? And I think for most big publishers, like, I am so glad to hear that you think that these publishers would say yes immediately. But I think for a lot of these publishers, I have a lot of doubt that they would cave, or else we wouldn't be going to strike in the first place.
Well, the thing about it is that if they want to still use American actors and people who are well known in the game industry, if American publishers drop all of that and start going to the UK because they may not be part of SAG, or they, you know, use their own Japanese and all, you could just read the subtitles and stuff like that. They have ways in the gaming industry to get around a lot of this. And so that's going to hurt most of the US actors and voice actors. If they could find a way to get around of all of this, they will. Motion capture, that don't matter to them. They could hire some people to do motion capture.
Well, what I mean is that, like, there's an understanding, at least for people who are in SAG-AFTRA, who are in the union, that when you are on strike, you are not, you're not working for basically anyone if they don't agree to our terms. So for actors to who are not in SAG-AFTRA to go and work for these companies, like, that for as we understand it right now, there's little to none of that happening on the movie side, right? There's no writers working for anyone who hasn't agreed to SAG, to the Writers Guild's terms. There's no actors doing the same thing. So I don't see a future where, while on strike, there are still video games being worked on in the way that they need to be worked on with
they will still be worked on. They just, like you said, they wouldn't use those actors or anything. You know, if they replace the whole voice and cast for The Last of Us and they deliver high quality Academy Award Oscar performances in The Last of Us Part 3, who's gonna be upset?
How do you mean?
Like, if, because, you know, Joel will be dead already. So, like, you can't really use Joel or the voice actor for that. But I'm just like, what if you use a whole different voice actor for Ellie? Like, she, even though she is an English actor, not the person who plays Ellie. But I'm just using, like, an imaginary person from the UK. That, you know, what if that voice actor from the UK, they, even though they got a British accent, they could still pull off an American accent. Sure. They could go in, Sony or Naughty Dog could go in and still use the contracts or whatever and replace Ellie or whoever, with a British actor. And all they got to do is just really speak American. And then all those voice actors you knew, or people you knew from The Last of Us Part 1 and 2, Troy Baker, Sony don't have to use him. What is he going to bring to the table?
I think the reality of striking and the way unions work, though, is that they do have a lot of pull and sway, and they can persuade these actors to say no, I think even a lot of the UK actors would, in solidarity, say no to those parts and leave these companies kind of high and dry. To say that you're wrong in that, you know, the companies will likely skirt around the union to get their work done. I just don't, I hope at least that it is it seems unrealistic that they would be able to get any of their major AAAs done without the union workers.
Look, Nintendo was able to make money and change the gaming industry with Super Metroid. And that's a story-based game that was told to do silence in music. You don't think they could go, a lot of companies could go back, definitely with those who are in the indie world? Like,
oh, I don't disagree with that, sure. In fact, I'm willing to bet that a lot of indies would benefit from the strike over many of the AAA companies.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah. I guess what I'm saying is that if you are, I don't know, if you're Activision Blizzard, and Modern Warfare 3 has just come out and you're about to come out with your next Call of Duty, none of the fanboys are going to buy a silent Call of Duty.
None of the fanboys are going to.
Or a terribly motion-acted Call of Duty.
Trust me, a lot of the fanboys are not going to care about the campaign. They're caring about the multiplayer. So
right, Call but of that's Duty, what I mean.
Modern Warfare 3 is going to sell so people can play the multiplayer. They don't care about the campaign. Who's been talking about Call of Duty's campaign?
Right, but there's a lot of other, you know, action that goes on, like the behind the back kill moves and stuff like that. A lot of that is motion capture. That's not just programming. So I think that when it comes down to even the multiplayer of a game like Call of Duty, or even something more storified, like if by some miracle Bethesda was like, here's the next thing, but we couldn't hire any motion capture people for it, and we also couldn't hire many voice actors, I don't, like, that would not be good. it wouldn't be good.
That wouldn't be good, or that wouldn't be an expectation of what people would think. Because I think the thing about it is that people would expect, I think gamers have gotten accustomed to so much of the glitz and glamour in games to have like this big Hollywood story driven kind of presentation. And not realizing that, hey, there could be some games that could go back to the NES era.
No, I don't disagree with that at all.
And stuff like there. And I think if the big AAA could do that in a cool, fashionable way, until they get ready to make a decision and come to an agreement, there's ways that these publishers and developers could still make games without needing the glitz and glamour to it.
I don't disagree with that, but I do think that at this point, for a game company like these major publishers, especially Activision and Epic and EA, to go what is essentially backwards instead of keeping with what is essentially the status quo, like, they wouldn't make money that way. You know what I mean? Not in the way that they have been making money. I think it would be a loss, and I think also it ignores the reality that, like, you have been employing these people who have been doing your voice acting and your motion capture for many years. You set an agreement in 2017. You're not upholding that same agreement that says that they're going to get their proper residuals from their work. And also, you're introducing the idea that you will not need them anymore because you're going to replace them with artificial intelligence, which is like capturing them anyway. Like,
you might not they may not even need to do AI. I think what happened is that they wouldn't just need to be more creative of developing a game. And now that they can rely on the glitz and glamour, you now have to focus on the game. Because then your trailers are going to change. Because now you have to show off your game. That's going to impress people who want to buy it.
Slightly beyond that, what this is also about really is the protection of those workers, right? Because those people up until the 26th, assuming that this strike authorization passes, will have had a stable job doing the – I say stable with heavy air quotes, but they would have had a job up until the 26th. Like Elias Tofexis, sorry again if I got your name wrong, said, right, like he did a whole bunch of motion capture for various video games, then found out that one of the studios like used the AI to recreate that in a separate game. He got like a small check that probably wasn't at the rate that was set in a contract, and also no credit in the video game, right? So they are already using artificial intelligence to like recreate a whole person in their video game. So it seems like this is like, I totally get that corporations are going to corporate, right? They're going to do what they have to do to get their product mm-hmm. out, no matter what that is. But it seems to me that they don't want to get rid of these people. But no, they also they don't want to protect these people. Like, it seems if we would not be having this conversation if they just negotiated the contract and it was fine. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I really feel like, despite the fact that corporations may be already plotting how they're going to move forward, and you may be right, maybe they are just going to go off the merits of their video game and not have to add any extra, you know, voice acting and motion capture and all that. I also think that there is a true reality where they are also prolonging this strike and not giving these workers the protections they need against things like artificial intelligence.
Yeah. And I think we won't really see the effects until 2024 and 25.
Sure.
And everything. Because it's like, if we don't have these so-called actors, and let's just say we don't have them in games from across, you know, the world. We don't have UK or Japanese actors. Like, let's just say they didn't, you know, get into the game. Games are still going to be made, and there's going to be still a way to present them. You know, what's going to end up happening, though, is that, of course, they're going to have to pay their workers more and everything, and animators more. But it's going to force developers to learn a new art form. You know, now you just can't try to use realistic graphics. You're going to have to do what Nintendo do. Maybe I have to make a Fallout game out of wool. Or, you know, maybe I have to use cell shading for the next art type or whatever. Maybe The Last of Us is a, you know, choose your own adventure for the cutscenes and stuff, and you just watch frames and stuff, or you see different, or maybe they use the style of Cuphead or something. Like, they are going to have to figure out how can we still make games, and if we can make games and be creative in a certain way, you know, we may have to go that route until all of this gets settled. Because what's going to end up happening is that it's going to end up hurting the voice actors and the people who do motion capture, who's going to be looking for jobs and stuff to do that. Because if they don't have any, I'm going to say that they won't have any other trade, but if they don't have any other route to make any, you know, other kind of income, they're going to have to figure out, what can I do to make some money? You know, because I can't use my talent. I can't use my gift because I'm held back by this contract. And I can't get an offer or anything because of the strike.
I have my, like, union. Unionness is boiling inside my body. Because one thing I will say, having gone through a union negotiation and now have also entered another one, unions do not give up, right?
Yes.
There are some unions that are 400 days without a contract and they are still pushing for that contract. So I think what we're going to see, if this goes through, is what you're saying. There will be likely tons of stories where we're getting, you know, this indie company said yes to all the terms and therefore these actors are doing fine. Or you'll see like a AAA game is completely silent because there's no voice actors or something like that. But you're also going to see these very resilient people doing side gigs as much as they can, you know, other jobs that they can do, right? Working in an office until such time that they can get back into what is essentially their trade, because that is, that's what unions are like. These are sort of tough assholes. I really hope that they get what they need.
Yeah, I do too.
Union boys and goyles. I'm rooting for you. Moving on to our last story for this episode, Starfield. Apparently in Starfield, if you're not having sex in the game, you're missing out on a big buff. Saving yourself for a romantic partner in Starfield may be hindering you from the emotional security buff. The buff increases your EXP gains to 15% for 24 minutes. While there are no quick one-night stands in the game, PC Gamer does report that the standards for many of the NPCs that can be interested in your character are quite low. So, you know, go make one fall in love with you and get your 15% EXP. The reason I wanted to go over the story is not necessarily because of the teehee sex, or even the buff, really. It's kind of a combination, I guess, in that there is something cool about not only making the game adult and adding sex to it, but also giving your character a buff from it, right? Like, it is making the adult themes of a video game, I think, a lot more exciting and innovative than just having, like, smut or sex or porn in the game, right? It's not just that. It is also that you are actually accessing a mechanic of the game in order to give yourself a little boost ahead. Which is so true to human life and nature, right? Like, you are, people enjoy sex because it makes them feel good, and then they go about their business and their day, and they're having a nice day because they had sex. So it really feels like it is a way to bring in those usually kind of taboo, usually kind of prudish elements to games and to media, and making it part of the shared experience of playing the game, right? I'm thinking about like Cyberpunk 2077, where I don't remember there being a buff for having sex. Like, I think you can just do it and that's it, right? Starfield takes it just a slight bit further and they're like, yes. And also for 24 minutes, you get extra EXP.
I think it's cool. I will say that. I think it's cool that, being intimate gives you a reward, for this. Now, how much intimacy you can indulge in, it's a question mark. Cause I don't know, like, yeah, you get 24 minutes, but does that count doing like, do you have to get it and then start a mission and hopefully that you kill enough people to get a reward out of it and stuff? I just don't know. I guess I would have to see, because just like, do you bang skeet, go on a mission? And your mission is way past 24 minutes. You know, or do you like, even if you bang skeet, do the space combat count also? Like, where does this experience go to? Is it for all the missions, the side missions that you do when you get into combat, or is it just land missions and stuff? You know, because you gotta.
I guess you like gotta see how it plays out. They say it's similar to the well rested bonus, which is what you get for sleeping in a bed, which is 10%. But I don't know having not played Starfield yet, I don't know how it works.
Because it's just like, Bansky going to mission. Oh, let me get done with the mission. Let me go Bansky again. Go on the mission. Like, is it now a do you use that as a washing machine gameplay?
Listen.
Wash, rinse,
I think
wash,
there are
rinse,
plenty of people who would, yeah. Right? Like, I think there are plenty of people who take advantage of certain buffs in video games, whatever they may be, however you may access them. And then they're like, well, I'm a max level in, you know, half an hour. It's been two days and I'm already done with the game because I decided I was going to bang every 24 minutes. And then beat the game at max level. I could see that happening.
Yeah, I would have to see how this goes and everything. Mm-hmm. But I think it's cool for people who want to go in, you know, and like complete the game that way.
Yeah. Well, you heard it here first, maybe. Go start banging. Bang, skeet, do a mission. I love that so much. It's time for This Week in Gaming History, where we discuss briefly some quick things that happened this week in gaming history. Starting with, of course, September 3rd, we have the Japanese release of Metal Gear Solid in 1998. I think that makes the game 21? Am I right? No.
No, 25. I'm sorry.
I was about to say, I'm 30. That can't be true.
But I'm 43, so I'm just like, that can't I remember be true. This. It's like, I remember this game in 98.
See what else we got. September 4th, Outlast in 2013 for the PC. Have you played Outlast?
No, I have not. I'm not a big PC gamer.
Oh, okay. That's fair. I am a PC gamer, and I am also a big horror fan, but I have not played Outlast because it's too scary. It's got too much gore, for one thing. I don't like, like, super excessive gore. And it's just too, like, I don't feel like being chased around by someone who is technically insane, but also very brilliant. I don't feel like doing that right now.
Didn't this game have a demo?
It did.
I think it did. Yeah. Yes, it did. I think I played the demo.
Not good enough to remember it, though. Pity.
It was a bit janky.
I do feel it may be still a janky game. Yeah. September 5th, Armored Core 3 for the PS2. Relevant because Armored Core 6 just came out.
And people didn't care about Armored Core because guess what? They weren't a From Software fan. If they were, they would have cared about this game.
That's true. That is very true. September 6th, Dead Island for 2011. Also relevant is Dead Island 2 is still pretty new.
Yeah, I remember this was a big game for Xbox 360 and Capcom because it was, you die so you can. It was like a rogue-like game, but it's, even though it was still set in its ways, that you had to die in order to get stronger. And continue diet to get as far as you can to progress. Yeah.
Dead Island. 12 years ago now. September 7th, we get both Final Fantasy VII in 1997 and Final Fantasy VIII in 1999.
And Final Fantasy VII is the best one. Final Fantasy VIII is questionable content. I do not like 8.
I've never played 7. I love 8.
You need to play 7.
I've never played 7. I'm still one of those people who is like, I've never played it.
You need to play it. And I never will.
Why not? It's like at this point, it's like a badge. Like, everyone is like, oh man, I love 7. And I'm like, okay. I have nothing bad or good to say about it. I just haven't played it.
I really think you should play 7. I think it's one of those games that you, even though you weren't around when it came out, but to get the history firsthand on why this game became beloved and why the creators are
keep going back to it.
Well, that's more Square Enix, but but why it was important to not only that franchise but to gamers themselves who got to experience it. Be like, why do you guys like Sephiroth? Like, why did y'all go crazy dropping your drives at Smash Brothers because Sephiroth was in it, or front, or Cloud was in it, and it was just like, I mean,
I think I can understand the hype around it. Like, I've seen enough of people playing it and enough of the internet to know why people like it. I think at this point, I'm just like, I know what happens. I know everything because everyone won't stop talking about it. I don't know that I need to experience it.
But I think you got to get the lead up. You know, you got to fight the bosses and get the experience on why in the heck is this house hitting me with missiles and stuff compared to why am I in the arena fighting this house? Oh my goodness, Final Fantasy Remake made me scream at that. I'm sorry if anyone who hasn't played that, but I think 7 Remake is 7. Definitely 7. I think you should play. You should experience. Okay.
We'll see. September 8th, Ready to Rumble for the Dreamcast releases in 1999, and Final Fantasy Tactics Advance for the Game Boy Advance in 2003.
Ready to Rumble. What a game.
I love that game.
I do too.
It is so charming. It is such a charming game.
I passed on Final Fantasy Tactics because I wasn't a Tactics player.
I really wasn't as a kid, but as I've gotten older, I really have started to dig tactics RPGs. I think they're really cool. I should go back and try Tactics Advance at some point.
I still fumble through some tactics games. Not so much like Fire Emblem, but
for sure. I fumble all the time. I think they're charming in a way, though.
Yeah, like games like Disgaea and stuff like that I'm kind of not overwhelmed, but I'm not prepared for this.
That's correct. I'm not smart enough for those games, but I still
yes, exactly.
Let's see. And finally, September 9th, Gunstar Heroes for the Sega Genesis in
1995. Yes.
PlayStation's birthday in 1995. It released with Parasite Eve and Spyro the Dragon. And it's also the Dreamcast birthday. September 9th, 1999, it released with Sonic Adventure.
Okay, now...
It's a big day for games on September 9th.
Parasite Eve did not come out when PlayStation released.
Didn't it?
No.
Let's make sure. Because that's what the internet told me. Parasite Eve came out September 9th, 1998. What did I say?
You said 1995
release. You're right. Sorry, my bad. What I meant to say was it came out on the same day as the PlayStation.
Okay.
Spyro definitely did come out with the PlayStation, I believe.
Because I remember I had the PlayStation 5. I had the PlayStation 1. And I remember my first game for that system was In the Zone by Konami.
Yes.
Because they had Run and Gun at the arcade. But then I also had the demo disc and used to dance to the Wipeout soundtrack on the demo disc and everything.
Yes, that is correct. But yeah, big day for video games.
Mm-hmm.
September 9th.
All these Gunstar Heroes. I never got to play it on the original Genesis, but I knew about it because of EGM. And then when it came to the Wii Retro Console, I downloaded that game with the quickness. Here you go, Nintendo, Sega. Here's my 800 points. Give me this game. And still to this very day, love it. I love Gunstar Heroes.
It's a great game. Give it a try if you haven't.
It's on NSO. X Special Pass.
Yeah. All right. And so, finally, as we move along toward the end of the show, we always ask that you give our listeners a recommendation. Which game should they be playing or be on the lookout for?
So, I think a game that people definitely should be playing, play Narco. It's an adventure game. That takes place in like New Orleans, about a, you know, kind of like oil gas, not oil gas, but, it takes place in that kind of area. And it deals with your character going to see her mom because her mom passed away and just and everything. And then it leads to this big adventure, a little bit almost like Snatcher on the Sega CD. And it's so good with the stuff that gets unrevealed and connected. So it's like kind of like a detective game. Mm-hmm. And everybody, you should definitely be on the lookout for Super Mario Brothers Wonder. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. That game is going to be so much fun. I can't wait. And fun in the fact that I cannot wait to see the level design and the animation that is going on. Cause like, this is a new thing for Nintendo. And it's a new director in charge of the Mario series with I think Miyamoto helping out or overlooking it. So I'm excited definitely for Super Mario Wonder. That one that you guys should be looking out. And just to let everybody know, Forza Motorsport for Xbox. That's their next game. I want to see how beautiful that game gets while driving and stuff.
Yeah.
So
very good.
Yeah.
I recommended it last week. I'm going to recommend it again. Go play Bomb Rush Cyberpunk. It is so much fun.
I need to buy it.
Just go grab it. It is beautiful. It evokes everything you love or may have loved about Jet Set Radio.
Jet Set Radio
Future. And it just feels good. It feels good to play. If you haven't played those games in the past, give this one a try and see if you like it. You'll love the music. So like, stop playing around. Just go do it. Hello.
Before we go, Comrade Jace, me and Corey actually had this discussion. If Nintendo gave Sega some money to bring Phantasy Star 5 and Jet Set Radio 3 to Nintendo's next platform for a launch day, how much money you think will roll in for those two games?
Phantasy Star 5, I think, relies a lot on people who have played the other Phantasy Star games. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, requires a lot of heavy lifting. Because I've been watching someone play the original games 1 through 4 recently.
Yeah.
And his reaction to them isn't... Like, his reaction to the first two were fine. His reaction to the third one was not fine. His reaction to the fourth one has been pretty good. And the fourth one is the one I remember most. And I don't remember it that fondly. I do remember liking it. I just don't remember, like, being so enamored with it. So I think Phantasy Star, especially because so many people only know it as an online game, would have to do a lot of heavy lifting. It would have to really do something to capture people to be like, oh, this is a series game. It's not just an online video game. Yeah. It's not just an MMO. It would have to do something really, really cool. It would have to look really good.
I mean, they got Atlas, so.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. It would have to, I think it would just have to be super, super duper, 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 duper good somehow. What was the other one? Oh, Jet Set Radio 3, like a third one.
Yes. Exclusively to Nintendo, console. No other console is getting it.
I think if one was made and it, again, took on the attributes that people love from the originals and made them slightly better or incredibly better, it would be amazing. And I do think that as a fan, it would be fantastic to see that happen. But I do think just based on the way that Bomb Rush Cyberpunk has been received, that it wouldn't even take that much. It would not even take that much for Nintendo, to be like, yeah, of course we'll take your game. Like, as long as Nintendo has someone willing to make a game that is Jet Set Future or Jet Set Radio like, It people will flock to it immediately. Like, I think the point of Bomb Rush Cyberpunk being, I think, only on PC and Nintendo Switch is that people will go, people will flock to those two things to make sure that they can play that experience again. So if Nintendo was like, yeah, we'll buy this IP and remake it, people would, I'm so sure that people would buy it in a heartbeat, without a doubt.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's thoughts from Kami Jace. And finally, to finish off this episode, please let us know where we can find you on the internet and if you have anything else to plug.
Well, you guys can find me on Twitter/X at That Virtual Cult. You can also check out Boss Rush Media at BossRush.net. Check out our content on YouTube at Boss Rush Games, where you can check out our podcast, you know, and get to see some of our past contents and everything. You actually get to see Comedy Jace on the 1v1 that I did with him a year back. As we talk about, I think, booty meat. Oh, we had an episode. We actually had Corey just blushing and laughing and just like, oh, well, you two are.
Let's do it again.
Yes. But yes, check also our articles at BossRush.net, and you can follow us on the Discord at BossRush Network.
Very good. Very good. All right. As always, you can find me at Comedy Jace Gaming on Twitter, and you can find the Weekly Cooldown as well on its own page at WK Cooldown. You can also find me on Blue Sky at Comedy Jace Gaming. Be sure to visit the Weekly Cooldown Instagram page. Visit WKCooldown.com for more news and other episodes. Check me out on Twitch. I stream on Twitch sometimes. Comedy Jace Gaming is the name. I'm trying to get it changed to just Comedy Jace, but we'll see if that happens. Be sure to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Remember that it helps the algorithm. It helps the show. It helps me, your favorite Comedy Jace. Be sure to check out the links in the description, including, of course, our Humble Bundle for this week. And remember that you can support your favorite charities and support this show. Our logo and art is done by Corgian. Find Corgian on Twitter at Doghouse Corgian. DoghousCorgian. Doghouse Corgian on Twitter. And our intro music is done by Riki. Find Riki on Twitter at Dog_Noise. DOG_NOISE. That's all for the Weekly Cooldown. I am Comedy Jace.
And I'm Eddie V.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.